Jonathan Faust. Hi, Jonathan.
Good morning, Serge. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah, same here. So, how did you get into focusing? How did you first encounter it?
Well, gosh, it feels like a long, long time ago. I generally don't feel old, but as I look back, I'm feeling old right now. I guess it was about 25 years ago, or maybe 30, actually. I was 25 years old. I had just finished up a term in the Peace Corps and had been traveling on my bicycle in North Africa and Europe, was totally worn down. I checked myself into an ashram just as a way to kind of get my health back a little bit more and explore a lot of what I'd been called to. So I was getting very deep into yoga, really quite immersed, and I just happened to pick up the book on focusing by Eugene. And there was something about reading it combined with my practice that really resonated for me. And I remember going through the steps as he outlined them so clearly in his book and having a very profound shift. And that experience really informed and inspired my practice. I went on to stay, you know, living and practicing in the ashram for a couple decades, really somehow informed very profoundly by that. I never pursued focusing in a formal way until about 5 or 6 years ago when I decided to kind of really learn more about it and did my training with you, which was a lot of fun. And since then, it's really informed my practice. I primarily teach meditation now, but I also am a focusing trainer and I work a lot privately with people in this really cool combination with mindfulness and the practice of focusing itself.
Yeah, you're really, your adult life has been about mindfulness, and you have been for many years a meditation teacher in the mindfulness tradition. So how does teaching focusing, you know, interact with this?
You know, there's this really, really bad, there's this misconception that meditation is about watching your breath.
Mm-hmm.
And really, what mindfulness meditation is about being aware of the here and now in the body. The body is really the resonant tool that we use, because the body doesn't live in the future. The body doesn't live in the past. When you're aware of the here and now in the senses, this felt sense, you are truly landed right here, right now, between the past and the future. So that the teachings that come through in Buddhist meditation are just incredibly profound. But what focusing offers is a whole new level of nuance in how we can explore what's referred to as the first foundation of Buddhist practice, which is mindfulness of the body.
So I want to just say again something you said that I felt very striking, is that to many people, meditation is confused with watching your breath, or mindfulness is confused with watching your breath. And there's just one avenue to it. And what you're saying is really it's something else. It's that awareness of the present and the role of the body in the awareness of the present.
Exactly. I think for the first 25 years of my life, I pretty much assumed the only reason I had a body was to make my head portable. You know, which is pretty much the Western approach to the body, you know,
yeah.
The Western approach, you know, Western approach to medicine, you know, is the body's this mechanical thing that we're trying to manipulate so we can keep the mind and the brain as functional as we can.
Yeah. A little more about that first foundation.
Well, first foundation practices are all about mindfulness of the body, and there are certain techniques that are used in Buddhist meditation to help us be aware of the body. Primarily, the Buddha talked about awareness of the body in the four positions. So there's seated practice, there is walking practice of meditation,
mm-hmm.
there's lying down meditation, which often people know as the body scan, and then standing meditation. In addition to that, there are all different kinds of ways that we can attune ourselves to the sense fields. The classic approach is being aware of the breath, you know, the movement of the breath inside. You can also have your awareness focus on sounds, which kind of brightens your awareness a little bit. And sound meditation is very, very powerful because it can really give you a very deep understanding of how sounds come and sounds go. Sounds are out of our control, but we're kind of the witness to what arises. And in that same way, we can apply that to the thoughts and feelings and emotions that arise.
Mm-hmm.
Another approach is to be aware inside the body itself. Some people find it really helpful to let their anchor for their attention be in the palms of the hands. Or scanning is a very, very powerful technique that is kind of the core technique in a lot of different traditions, where you're very, very lightly scanning through the body, noticing the quality of sensation, not trying to invoke any particular state, but to be aware of what's there. And this is where I think the practice of focusing brings in a whole new level of nuance as we draw our attention to the felt sense and how those issues, really live inside our tissues.
Right. So that's a similarity with the scanning and paying attention to the sensation, but we're in focusing, it's not just about sensation, but about the felt sense.
Exactly. Yeah. It's about sensation, about felt sense, and one of the definitions I like so much in meditation is that it's awareness of what's arising as it's arising, but also being aware of our relationship to what's arising. And that's where, when we look at Buddhist meditation, we have pure sensation. It's not good, not bad. But then what comes out of that is a felt sense. There's a quality of pleasant, a quality of unpleasant, and a quality of neutral.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there will come the stories and the emotions and so forth. So when we bring our attention down into that realm of what's actually happening in my body right now, and how it's forming into some constellation of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, that's where it gets very, very interesting. That's where we can begin to find some real freedom.
So in mindfulness, you're observing things as they're arising, but also your relationship to what's arising. And focusing gives you the tool of the felt sense.
Exactly. And that's where our freedom lies. That's where we can begin to unhook from what we're identified with, what we're clinging to, what we have this visceral clenching inside. Mm-hmm. That's where the freedom can really, really occur.
So it's a little bit of a paradox, isn't it, that, we're talking about connecting to the felt sense, and you're talking about that as a sense of unclenching with something.
Yeah. And then we look at the components. I kind of consider the DNA of mindfulness practice essentially comes down to two questions.
Mm-hmm.
What is my direct experience right now? And the next question is, can I be with it? Can I make space for it? Can I allow it? And when you really look at this, the reflection on what's my experience right now, that's really the path of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're cutting through the story, you're cutting through your preferences, you're cutting through all of the detritus you have about your experience to what's exactly true, what's exactly happening right now.
So I want to just maybe slow down a little bit on this, because that's talking about, when you talk about stories, it's interpretations, it's preconceptions, it's old habits, it's, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, you could put it under the general category of delusion.
Mm-hmm.
What are all the hallucinations I have about what's going on, as opposed mm-hmm. to what's really going on?
Mm-hmm.
So wisdom really reveals to us what we have to let go of. We know in life that we have to let go of this body. We know we have to let go of everyone we love and everything we hold dear. We know that. That's what wisdom reveals. But that's only 50% of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
The other part of this is compassion. That's kind of the lubrication that allows you to let it go. And that's where I find, this whole piece that when we can locate that felt sense, when we really begin to contemplate, being kind to it, holding it in loving presence, holding it in open awareness, you know, offering it, you know, some form of metta, some form of loving kindness. That's the lubrication. That's when things begin to, when things begin to shift.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that, that metaphor to be a very, very helpful bridge between mindfulness practice and kind of the art of really working in with this technology of focusing.
Yeah, yeah. So that the holding of the felt sense is something you describe as a lubricant, because in doing that, there is a sense of compassion.
Yeah, there's a sense of compassion. There's sort of this reminder, as in the Tonglen practice,
mm-hmm.
the Tibetan practice, where we're reminding ourselves other people feel this too. You know, our relationship to that hard, you know, sticky, you know, unformed, vague, sick feeling inside,
mm-hmm.
it begins to shift when we create a different space around it.
Right. So, again, going very slowly, I see the compassion at a couple of different levels. One of them is other people feel that way. And another one is earlier when you had talked about seeing things as they are. You talked about, you used harsh words like delusion. And the compassion is realizing that in these delusions we are just like everybody else.
Absolutely, absolutely. Kind of what happens is that there is a shift in identity
mm-hmm.
when we can really be present to this experience. Our identity shifts from kind of like, you know, I and mine. And somehow I find in my own practice, when I can really bring sincerity and energy and awareness to it, that there will be these experiences where I and mine fall away.
Mm.
And when I and mine fall away, suddenly we're just more aware of a much, much bigger field.
So when I and mine falls away, then suddenly there's no grip for the inner critic.
Exactly. And there's no good and there's no bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's kind of no up and no down. And in that suspension of good and bad, as the third Zen patriarch, is one of my favorite dudes, said, make the slightest distinction between good and bad, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart.
That's a great one, yeah.
And when we start off with focusing, you know, or with meditation, there's oftentimes this sense that there's something wrong. There's something that needs to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very much in that kind of good and bad reference. But again, when we bring sincerity and genuine curiosity and inquiry to our experience, whether it be in meditation or whether it be in a focusing session, what that can do is it can move us from that very, very tight sense of a small I
mm-hmm.
to new possibilities.
So I have a sense as you're talking, it's as almost a physical sense of tight versus expanding.
Yeah. It's definitely, to me, that sense of when we feel that felt shift. But what I find so interesting, and I had the opportunity to bring this up a couple summers ago at one of the summer institute we went to mm-hmm. at Garrison. When we have that felt shift, what's really going on? I think sometimes for myself, when I feel the felt shift, what I'm focusing on is how I feel better.
Mm-hmm.
That sick feeling like I'm going to die, you know, just below my solar plexus is shifting and now I feel better. But what I found very interesting is to keep tracking that felt shift.
Mm-hmm.
Because in sort of tracking the felt shift and sort of feeling the outer edges of that felt shift, there can be a very profound shift in consciousness. As opposed to, I am now someone who feels better. If I can really stay with the subtlety of it, what really leads us to a much, much more profound question is, what am I?
Mm-hmm.
What's
mm-hmm.
really, you know, what's going on here? What am I as the awareness in which all this phenomena, this constellation of sensation and mood and thought is shifting and changing and moving?
Yeah. So what you're describing is that gentleness of the process where you're staying with the felt shift, not even taking the felt shift as an answer, but staying with it, making room for it, exploring it, continuing with it, and then that something happened which connects you to the larger question of who am I?
Yeah, yeah. I think the key word that you used that really strikes me is gentle.
Mm-hmm.
Because safety is paramount. You know, when we are gentle, when we feel safe, we relax. And when we relax, our hearts naturally begin to open. When our hearts begin to open, we're naturally more willing to look outside the box that we usually live in. So with that sense of gentleness and the other parallel between meditation and focusing is really what we're doing is we are gathering our attention.
Mm. Could you speak more about that, the gathering our attention?
Yeah, you know, we think about 60,000 thoughts a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who counted. And I'm not sure I want to meet the person who counted. But I think that's about right for me.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've noticed for myself is about 98% of the thoughts that I have each day are pretty much the same thoughts I had yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And so when our identification is with the mind and those 60,000 thoughts, we're living a very, very scattered life.
Yeah.
Ramana Maharshi described the mind as a drunken monkey stung by scorpions, which is a pretty apt description of my mind sometimes. So when we sit down to meditate or we sit down to do focusing, you know, whether we're kind of doing an inquiry, just a self-inquiry using kind of the focusing questions, or whether it be in a facilitated process, we begin to gather our attention. And what we're gathering our attention on is this direct experience in the here and now in
yeah.
the body.
Yeah.
And that's where the magic happens.
And so direct experience in the here and now in the body, and that experience of gentleness, and you say when you talk about the heart, is not just as a metaphor, but there's a sense of the body stilling, or there's a sense of our internal rhythms just slowing down.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. And I think that's where kind of as we get trained in taking people into the focusing experience, you know, it's all about that process of helping people slow down. So the images that are used and by different teachers, you know, that sense of, you know, the felt sense being a kind of a wild animal right at the edge of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other languaging that's used of, you know, that when you're doing focusing, you're looking for that turtle on the sidewalk, you know, you're
mm-hmm.
looking for the slow moving, the vague, the unformed.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes training. That takes real practice. And that's where oftentimes when people ask me about focusing, I talk about it as a training for the mind.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what about, you know, when you talk about the training, there's a part of the training, of course, that's about techniques or giving tips in a way, but there is a part that is transmitted by the direct experience of the teacher, you know, that kind of resonance. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Wow, what a great question. It reminds me of, I've sat with the Tibetan teacher for a number of retreats. His name is Sogni Rinpoche.
Mm-hmm.
And he teaches in the Dzogchen tradition, which is different than the mindfulness tradition that I've been practicing for the last good while. And I was having some very profound experiences in my practice, and I was describing them to him as, you know, not full-time states, but I'd have these moments of, you know, I described it as a luminosity that would just begin to arise, this sense of equanimity that was really profound. And I asked him, well, what can I expect if I keep doing this practice? You know, can
mm-hmm.
I just plan on more of the same? And he said, if you continue with sincerity in your practice, he said, one thing will begin to arise. And I was really surprised by what he said. And the word he used was confidence.
Mm.
So you will find yourself more confident that you can be with anything. And I think that if there's any transmission with someone who is sort of skilled and comfortable and trained as a teacher or someone who offers this focusing modality, the more you do it, the more confident you become.
Yeah.
And that's what I find, that if I'm with someone and they feel really, really lost, or they're really in a very, very deep stuck place, I have a much, much more profound sense of confidence that presence and compassion are what carry the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So really confidence that comes from the experience of that journey. I mean, that seems like the metaphor of the journey is applicable here.
Yeah, and I think just as in any spiritual tradition, you can sort of learn from your head and communicate through your head, and that has a certain effectiveness. And you can do the inner work yourself and then teach from that place inside. Mm-hmm. And that has a different quality of effectiveness. So I think for anyone who is teaching focusing, certainly to keep engaged into the technique itself, but having a meditation practice, I feel can be just a very, very powerful adjunct for keeping the juices flowing inside.
Mm-hmm. When you talked about focusing as a training for awareness, could you expand on this a little bit?
Yeah, I was really struck by what Dr. Genlin talked about, how, it really takes a period of time to begin to get the process of focusing, kind of in your nervous system. And one of the things I really appreciated about Robert Lee and the training that I did with him over 2 years was how he emphasized this as well. Of really just sort of saying up front, it takes about 10 months of practice where you'll begin to notice how you can more consciously shift from the cognitive into that sort of direct experiential felt sense. So I became really intrigued with this, and I have created a program called A Year of Living Mindfully, which I offer down here in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
This is the second year that
I've offered. It's a great name.
Oh, it's been phenomenal. But we really have focusing partnership as a core piece through the entire year. And these are people who, really are committed to their spiritual practice and around developing as a community and all of that good stuff. But having the focusing partnerships as a fundamental part of the year long has given me an opportunity to see the effect of consistent practice.
Mm-hmm.
And just how profound it can facilitate growing awareness and growing compassion for those who are really committed to it.
So, in a way, it's two things. One is, of course, the practice, as you just say. But I can see that with the interaction, there's something else, and the practice is also the resonance with another nervous system, with another spiritual being, that's just takes us out of our one-person system.
Yeah, absolutely. And in some ways, I think that the partnerships have, I'm at a loss for words here, really, because what they offer is a kind of a doorway to very, very profound intimacy that is created in a very, very safe way.
Mm-hmm.
And I've incorporated this sense of kind of what I call interpersonal meditation into a lot of the trainings and retreats that I lead, primarily based on my own experience of what it's like to be with someone in an environment that is very, very safe.
So
where we can do personal inquiry together.
I like that word, that phrase of interpersonal meditation. Do you want to just expand on that a little more?
Yeah, in any given moment, we have this opportunity to explore what's my experience right now and can I be with it? And meditation is seen as a very internal practice. When we can bring it into the relational field, somehow this is my experience, and what a lot of people report is that when we do it with another person, the whole experience becomes more amplified.
Mm-hmm.
Having someone who is a presence, a witness, someone holding the space, can have a very, very profound way of sharpening attention. You know, it helps us to gather our attention in a more profound way. So for those of us who are doing the kind of the internal work, having this person present for us is very powerful. But also as the listener or the focusing partner, we have an opportunity to bear witness to another person in their truth.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, when I just think back to the, you know, to the partnership that you and I have done, and that you and I have done, you know, in our training with Robert, and a really amazing connection builds, because there becomes more of an identification with kind of the space that we're holding together for each other, rather than our individual complaints.
Yeah, no, that's a very, very nicely put. That you know, you started talking about it, referring to it as inner work, and that's usually what people think of in terms of meditation or focusing. And what you're describing is the shift that happens from the sense of it being inner work to that larger space that's jointly held.
Yes, exactly. So we become more and more intimately present to the here and now. And somehow in that relational field, we become more intimately aware of the space that's holding it.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And I love that wonderful quote by Sri Nisargadatta, who said, you know, wisdom tells me I am nothing. Compassion tells me I am everything.
Yeah.
Between those two, my life flows.
Mm.
So there's something just enormously powerful about the relational aspect to it. And of course, if we bring it back to Buddhist practice, you know, one of the three refuges, you know, where we go when we feel lost, when we feel stuck, you know, one is to, we take refuge in awareness itself. We take refuge in what is true. And the third is we take refuge in like-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
And that third refuge is in many ways the juiciest. To be with someone of like mind, and to name what is present, to bring our awareness to it with compassion, to kind of hold the space for it to move and shift and transform, that is just about as close to heaven on earth as it gets.
Yeah, and I want to point out there that, in a way, it's such a profound difference from a stereotype that people sometimes have of spiritual work as something that is going inside to the exclusion of others, or to the exclusion of body, or spirit is to the exclusion of body. And what you're describing is something that's so much about that felt sense of connection that's anchored in the body, and that's much, you know, that's really related to others.
Exactly. And I think the more that we open our hearts and our minds to our experience, the more that we realize that the body is the doorway, and the community, you know, like-minded people, or sangha, if you will, is part of what holds that space.
Mm-hmm.
In such a profound way.
Yeah, how one holds that space in a small level, if you want, in the body, and a large level in the sangha.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And even when you're on a long meditation retreat, it's all in silence. You're still being supported by the field of like-minded practitioners.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool.
So that's why you've been actually now integrating this work into retreats that you're doing.
Yeah, I lead a lot of, I take part in a lot of kind of classic Vipassana retreats, but I led a 5-day retreat at Kripalu Center this summer. The title was called The Still Small Voice Within, Meditation, Focusing, and Intuition Training.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a real opportunity for us to kind of dive in experientially, you know, a little bit of cognitive, but a lot of experiential inquiry into what does it mean to really gather our attention?
Mm.
What does it mean to really begin to open our attention to this felt sense through interpersonal meditation? And to really, what are the questions that are most important, that we really want to begin to unlock? And how do we tap into that sense of kinesthetic intuition? You know, that sense of what feels right in this moment in relationship to the life questions I have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was a very profound experience, very inspiring.
Great. So, Jonathan, as we're coming to the end, I want to just check if there's something you would want to say, or if we're just this feels like a good place to end at this point.
Well, I want to maybe just to take a moment and first of all thank you for for your time and what you're doing in really serving the focusing community and the larger community through these conversations. And also just a big wave of gratitude to the whole focusing community. I'm just so touched by their inspiration and by their drive as they're bringing it forward. And I'm very happy to be a resource for people who are interested in exploring more of this. I do have a website and a blog and all that sort of stuff, which people can track me down.
Great. Thanks, Jonathan.
Okay. Thanks so much, Serge.
Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
So, this is part of the Focusing Conversations series of the Focusing Institute, hosted by Serge Prengel. All contents are protected by copyright. You can find other such conversations on our website at focusing.org/conversations.